Crawdad's shelled body jerked spasmodically, not in response to the bullet's impact, which, like any handgun bullets, was fairly negligible, but from the command center in his central nervous system abruptly blowing out. His knees buckled and he dropped straight down. Another voice shouted from the vicinity of the chopper's quiescent tail rotor. Riker didn't wait to continue the conversation. He rabbited straight away into the tall grass. "Hey, Rube," was Team Phoenix's code, meaning the game was up and the cards in your hands were the ones you played. All his buddies needed now was an indication that Reichert was clear before each unleashed his own little piece of hell. As he ran, balls out right now and not bothering to dodge, Reichert's left thumb unsnapped a little black plastic cover and mashed down a red button. Even as his sin-eater slammed into his waiting hand, the mag by the chopper Reichert had just quitted spun in reflex response to the head-splitting noise. The shape charge was just that. It directed the high-frequency energies of its explosion with great precision. Neither the backblast spike, nasty in itself but angled up and away, nor the main focused jet of almost plasma gas did the magistrate any harm. But the yellow wall of flame as the fuel in the Deathbird's tanks blew killed him, noisily and not quickly. The pilot of the airborne Deathbird did his part to help with his own destruction. He increased his airspeed, then let the chopper drift downwind while he pivoted its nose toward the stricken craft. It was maybe the most useless place on Earth's surface he could possibly have pointed the business end of his Deathbird. At one of his own birds, now useless and on fire. It was an open invitation for Robeson, now standing in the lab's cupola. He lit off another stinger and put it right up the pipe of the chopper's right engine. The pilot and gunner commander were still in their seats in the second escort Deathbird. The engines were hot, the rotors turning over, as much to add to the intimidation factor as to be prepared to leap into the sky to the defense of the hybrid masters. The pilot changed the blade angle to bite the air and crank the throttle. Some preconscious impulse made the pilot turn his head and stare straight out the right-hand windscreen panel as his engine sped up the rotor and the Deathbird broke free of gravity's embrace. The 20-millimeter projectile that struck the polycarb panel pierced it as if it were rotten cheesecloth. It vaporized the mag's hard contact helmet and the head within it, then it exploded. By that time, the burst of launched 40-millimeter grens from Big Bob's turret had arrived at the party from the northeast. Ditching the spent FIM-92 launcher, Larry Robeson had dropped down into the gunner's seat. To spare the captives, as much as could be done anyway, he had slammed in a belt of high-explosive dual-purpose grens mixed 1-in-4 with standard smoke instead of the standard Team Phoenix mix, which included a hearty helping of white phosphorus rounds. With all their high-tech toys, the MIBs might well have passive infrared that could pick out human targets through the smoke. Their Indige auxiliaries had only eyeballs MK1 and could not. Just another little something to render the playing field even less level. Team Phoenix never played fair. It was a point of honor. The 40-millimeter grenades launched by the MK-19 weren't terribly powerful, less even than hand grenades, but Team Phoenix had unanimously chosen the auto-grenade launcher as main turret armament for the Lab 25. They loved man-portable single-shot gren launchers, even less potent, because they gave a mighty boost to team firepower, and in the hands of an artist, such as Major Mike or Sean Reichert, they could serve as mini-mortars, dropping rounds right behind cover to get at those annoying, hard-to-reach places. Big Bob's bigger boomer, meanwhile, provided big fire on call out to beyond a click and was good on both thin-skinned and reasonably hardened targets. The HEDP heads were deliberately inefficient-shaped charges so that they combined a radius effect blast with the incandescent jet. Not terribly good at both, but you barely noticed the fact when a dozen or so landed on or around you. The hard contact armor of the four magistrates guarding the precious, highly secret bodies of the hybrid protected them from the feeble explosions. It was little help to the mag, who by sheer piss-poor luck took a direct hit right below his right arm. The focused blast flash-boiled the fluids inside his chest so enthusiastically that the resultant steam explosion blew his right arm right out of his body, armor and all. The others were unscathed. Not so the unprotected hybrids. Two were shredded by the barrage. One was killed instantly. The other fell kicking and mewling in its strange high voice, its right leg torn off at the hip, its belly and chest ripped by fragments, spraying its thin blood over the mags who sought to protect the masters. The other two hybrids were hustled on board the black cargo lifter by the three surviving bodyguards.